o'clock. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for our voices. We want some of the geek radio people to hang on as well. Maybe you can give us some calls about Arab stuff instead of computer stuff. Stay tuned. Good evening and welcome to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and kpft.org on the World Wide Web. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host, Mark. Our guests tonight will be two members of the International Solidarity Movement, Frances Nugent, who just came back from the West Bank and Baghdad, and Amina Al-Zahir, who will be going to the West Bank next month. We will discuss with them the latest developments in the Middle East and listen to France's eyewitness experience. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's start with our local community calendar.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center, the ACC, is offering a variety of free health screening services to the Houston community at large. The ACC Medical Clinic is open on Sundays from 2 till 4 p.m. Different doctors with different expertise are providing this free service. To make an appointment or for more information, call the ACC at 832-351-3366.
The first comprehensive exhibition in the United States devoted to the contemporary art of Palestine is on display in Houston. Made in Palestine is a survey of work by Palestinian artists living in the West Bank, Gaza, Syria, Jordan, and the United States. These artists, representing two generations of modernists and postmodernists, work in a multiplicity of techniques and mediums, including painting, sculpture, video, performance, textiles, ceramics, and photography. This art exhibition is displayed at the Station Museum, located at 1502 Alabama Street, and will last there throughout October. For more information, call 713-529-6900.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center will hold its 8th annual Friendship and Unity Gala on Saturday, October 18th. This gala will be held at the J.W. Marriott Hotel in the Galleria area. This year's honorees include Ralph Nader, Mayor Lee Brown, and Bassam Barrazi. For more information about this gala or to reserve a seat, call the Arab American Cultural and Community Center at 832-351-3366.
World-renowned Arabic musician Simon Shaheen is coming to Houston for a one-of-a-kind music performance. The music ranges from traditional Arabic to jazz and classical styles. The concert will take place on October 4 at 7:30 p.m. at the University of Houston Cullen Performance Hall. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit adchouston.org or call 713-532-4232.
The Houston chapter of the American Muslim Council and the Houston Muslim community are holding a town hall meeting this coming Saturday, September 13th at 5 p.m. in the Community Center ISGH Northwest Zone. This is in the Spring Branch area located at 1209 Conrad Sauer. This town hall meeting was requested by the United States Attorney Michael T. Shelby to discuss initiatives of the Southwest District Anti-Terrorism Task Force and to address the concern of the Muslim community in Houston. For more information on this event, call 713-628-8980. And now to the news, Saeed.
The Palestinian leadership strongly condemned the renewed Israeli assassinations and the recent bombings in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, saying it will not tolerate them. Both the leadership and the new prime minister said that the deteriorating security situation requires an immediate and urgent intervention by the quartet of the U.S., the European Union, the United Nations, and Russia before it's too late. The two bombings yesterday killed at least 14 Israelis in back-to-back attacks in West Jerusalem and near Tel Aviv. The Tel Aviv explosion went off shortly before 6 p.m. in front of a bus stop near an Israeli military base. At least seven were reported killed and many injured, mostly soldiers and military personnel. About 4 hours later, and in a late-night attack on a cafe in West Jerusalem, seven people were killed and about 40 more were wounded.
The Palestinians also condemned today's Israeli F-16 fighter jet bombing of the family home of Hamas spokesman Mahmoud Zahar in Gaza City. This killed his eldest son and one of his bodyguards and seriously injured his wife and leveled the building to the ground. The Israeli attack also caused grave damage to several nearby Palestinian homes, as well as devastation of the local mosque. At least 30 civilians were injured in this bombing. The Israeli assassination attempt today came 4 days after an attempt against the spiritual leader of the Hamas movement, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, in which about 15 Palestinian civilians were wounded when an F-16 jet dropped a quarter-ton bomb on a building in the Gaza Strip on Saturday. Since the assassination of Hamas member Ismail Abu Shenab on August 21st, the Israeli occupation forces have extrajudicially executed at least 14 Palestinian activists, together with at least 4 children and an elderly person, in addition to wounding scores of civilians and bystanders.
The Israeli occupation forces killed 3 Palestinians yesterday in the southern West Bank city of Hebron, including an 11-year-old Thaer Asayuri. The Israeli occupation forces also destroyed an 8-story apartment residential building which housed 24 families, leaving dozens of Palestinians homeless. Another Palestinian was murdered by the Israeli soldiers in Gaza yesterday.
To add more fuel to the fire, Israel said it will expand an illegal Jewish settlement, a colony in the occupied West Bank territory, and announced a bid to build 102 new settler units in the West Bank colony of Efrat. This is in spite of the U.S.-backed Roadmap peace plan requiring a construction freeze. The units are to be built south of occupied Jerusalem in the colony of Efrat, which is one of the largest in the West Bank, with about 7,000 settlers. Since Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip in 1967, Israel has built more than 162 illegal colonies in both areas. Both the international community and the United Nations consider these colonies and settlers illegal.
The newly nominated Palestinian Prime Minister, Ahmed Qureya, known as Abu Ala, accepted the nomination to assume the post of Prime Minister to replace Mahmoud Abbas, who resigned last week. Abu Ala demanded guarantees from Washington and Europe to pressure Israel to live up with its obligations stipulated in the Roadmap peace plan and change its policy regarding continued sidelining of the Palestinian President Yasser Arafat. He said, "I don't want to see assassinations and demolition of houses. I want to see a real ceasefire." Qureya warned that if Israel doesn't change the way it treats the elected Palestinian president, there will be no need for a prime minister or a Palestinian government. Ahmed Qureya is the Palestinian who helped reach the 1993 Oslo peace accord between Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization. The European Union immediately offered its full support for Qureya's new position. An official spokeswoman for Javier Solano, the European Union's foreign policy chief, Christina Gallack, said, "He is a man who believes in peace with Israel, and he has done a lot for that. Therefore, he will get all support from the European Union."
Amnesty International said in a newly released report on Sunday, quote, "Israel must put an end to the imposition of disproportionate and discriminatory restrictions on Palestinians' movement in the occupied territories, which have crippled the Palestinian economy and caused widespread poverty, unemployment, and increasing health problems," close quote. The report, titled "Surviving Under Siege, the Impact of Movement Restrictions on the Right to Work," Amnesty International harshly criticized Israeli government policies of travel restrictions and closures of Palestinian cities, towns, villages, and refugee camps. The report mentioned that closures, blockades, checkpoints, curfews, and a barrage of other restrictions imposed by the Israeli occupation forces on Palestinians have made even short journeys between towns and villages difficult, dangerous, and often impossible, effectively confining some 3.5 million Palestinians to a form of town arrest. The report mentioned that these policies have also prevented Palestinian workers from reaching their workplaces, causing a cessation in the production of factories, farms, workshops, and consequently driving them out of business due to the losses incurred. The report revealed that all this led to a soaring of unemployment to over 50% and that half of the Palestinian population is living under the poverty line. Amnesty also slammed the Israeli government for its construction of its separation barrier, saying that the barrier, which goes deep into the West Bank lands, further increases and complicates the movement restrictions of the civilian Palestinians by cutting off tens of thousands of Palestinians from the rest of the West Bank and or their farming lands and irrigation water. It said, quote, "Israel must refrain from constructing walls, fences, or other permanent structures inside the occupied territories which constitute or result in permanent restrictions of the free movement of Palestinians within the occupied territories or in the arbitrary destruction or seizure of their property," close quote. Concerning the settlement activity, Amnesty also urged Israel to put an end to the Israeli settlement activities, including the construction or expansion of Jewish settlements in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and to take immediate measures to evacuate Jewish settlers from these settlements. Furthermore, the organization restricted its call to the Israeli authorities. Reiterated its call to the Israeli authorities to put an immediate end to the extrajudicial execution and killing of Palestinian civilians.
At least one American soldier was killed today by an explosive attack on a military vehicle northeast of Baghdad. another U.S. soldier was injured in this incident. The death toll of the American soldiers in Iraq has been on the rise, with at least 280 reported killed and hundreds others injured since the beginning of the war. Iraqi casualties are also mounting, and according to IraqBodyCount.net, over 7,800 Iraqi civilians have been reported killed since the beginning of the war.
President Bush requested on September 7th, 3 days ago, from the U.S. Congress an $87 billion funding for the coming year to pay for military and rebuilding costs in Iraq and Afghanistan. This raised many questions in the U.S. and throughout the world about the poor planning of this war and the true reasons behind it, especially when the reason given initially start this war turns out to not be true. The $87 billion request includes $51 billion for military operations in Iraq and $15 billion for Iraqi reconstruction and political advancement. The $87 billion are on top of what has already been spent on the war, and that makes the total about $160 billion this year. The $15 billion is roughly equal to the amount that would have been used in Iraq under the old UN Oil for Food program.
Finally, and in other news, Syria's Prime Minister Mohammed Mustafa Miro presented today his government's resignation to the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. President al-Assad accepted the resignation of the government and instructed Mohammed Naji Atri, Speaker of the Parliament, to form a new cabinet. We will take a short break now, and when we come back, we will talk with two members of the International Solidarity Movement, Frances Nugent, who just came back from the West Bank and Baghdad, and Amina Al-Zahir, who will be going to the West Bank next month. We will discuss with them the latest developments in the Middle East and listen to Frances' eyewitness experience. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
Yalla.
We gotta compromise just to stay alive. We in this together forever, so we get a vibe. You lost all feeling, have your senses gone numb? That's dumb, cause you know precisely where I'm coming from. The stress invests my tummy, I need some Tums. Twisting, turning, pulling tight. Your breath blinds my sight, I can't think whenever we fight. It's been so long, the path we took was so wrong. And you made me weak and yourself so strong. Back and forth like ping pong. Our lives intertwined and you're bluffing and suffering. We're both struggling to maintain life. You need strife on your quest like Fife to keep everything from falling to pieces. Brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, we both want peace, but I'm the one who keeps getting pleased. Keep nodding your head, cause your promises went dead a long time ago. Now I know, here we go, toe to toe, you're throwing bows like masterfully. We should settle things drastically, cause I think we both realize we can't stay together without true compromise. Palestinian, so it's hard enough to get through all these messed up times and stuff. The ones I love are getting bombed from above. What am I supposed to do with you? I'm at halfway, but you couldn't do what you're supposed to do. It's further than you ever went. That don't make it sufficient. Was it about the dollars and cents? Was the pressure too intense? Cause now you're building the fence called separation. You've been making preparations for some time now. You can't fool me. You're just a tool to me. Cause there's others stronger than you telling you what to do. You can't make peace cause it ain't in you. History's gonna remember you as poo-poo. Doo-doo. Cutter. You're not my brother. You're not my lover. You just moved in for the weekend. Not as a friend, but as someone interested. It's even and deceiving. Now I have to compromise with the opposite side, even though they won't really even try. I'm tired of being the good guy when bad always wins. Inshallah, God will remember your sins. love me for backwards, even though I didn't lack words. I spoke to you in clear communication. Now my nation is due for liberation. It was true, but you looked passing through as if I was invisible. I'm not divisible. You took it like I gave it to you, and you didn't even have a clue. You thought that I'd forget, get away with it, but the truth is much further from it. Here we are in dispute. You shoot, I shoot back, and then you go on attack. It could have been different if you compromised in the past. What can we do to make the cycle stop? I can't say for sure, but I know your actions are not helpful. They're reprehensible. I'm not defensible. I'm human. I'm a Palestinian. Cause my nation is due for liberation. It's true. I'm telling you, that's what we gotta do to make peace.
Peace process was a joke.
You gotta start giving so we can start living. You gotta make peace with us
and show us some justice.
Welcome back to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and kpft.org on the World Wide Web. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host, Mark. With us now live in the studio are two members of the International Solidarity Movement. Frances Nugent is a local Houstonian who just came back from the occupied Palestinian territories and from occupied Baghdad. Also with us is another member of the International Solidarity Movement, who is also a local Houstonian, and that is Amina Al-Zahir, who is planning to travel to the occupied Palestinian territories next month. Frances and Amina, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And Frances, let me start with you, if I may, by asking you to give our listeners some information, first of all, about the International Solidarity Movement, and then we'll talk about your experience in the occupied Palestinian territories and also in Baghdad.
The International Solidarity Movement was founded in September of 2001, and about a year after the beginning of this most current intifada. It's an organization or a movement, depending on what you want to call it, where internationals from all over a wide variety of countries go to work within the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and the occupied territories of Palestine, and aid the Palestinian resistance to occupation through nonviolent direct action means. Since its inception in 1991, over 1,500 international activists have participated in ISM working in the West Bank and in Gaza.
And we know that Rachel Corey, was a member of the International Solidarity Movement who went early this year to Rafah in the Gaza Strip and was murdered in March by the Israeli occupation forces when she was trying to protect a Palestinian house from being demolished and destroyed. An Israeli military bulldozer basically ran over her and murdered her. We know several others were also shot. Several have been arrested, and Israel has been hunting the international peace-loving people from going to the occupied Palestinian territories to assist the Palestinians and to reveal to the world also the real story of what's happening on the ground there.
Yeah, the international presence, at least working with members of ISM, are certainly not welcomed by the Israeli government or the Israeli military, and are restricted in entering the country and moving about the country in a very similar manner to the way Palestinians are restricted.
Now, Frances, what motivated you to join the International Solidarity Movement, and what made you decide basically to go to the occupied territories?
Well, just in the last couple of years, I've had more of an interest, a growing interest in politics and history, particularly in the Middle East. Throughout my lifetime, the events going on in the Middle East, you know, the United States has such a direct role and an indirect role and such a high amount of influence in the region that, you know, that dynamic has always fascinated me. What is my role as an American? What is, you know, the role of the United States itself in the Middle East? And in the last couple of years, I have been increasingly drawn to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict itself. And, you know, at last, it was about a year ago, this month, last September, I heard a woman by the name of Devorah Browse, who works with a group called Bustan al-Shalom, which works in unrecognized Bedouin and Palestinian villages in southern Israel. I heard her speak here in Houston at the Rothko Chapel, and that is when I first really learned that there are internationals going over to the West Bank and to Gaza and, you know, doing good work. It was this spring, Rachel's death brought my personal attention to ISM, and, you know, for the last couple of years as I followed, you know, the events of this most recent intifada, I really had a strong feeling that I wasn't getting an accurate portrayal of some of the horrors and some of the oppression that's going on in the West Bank and in Gaza. And there was really a strong desire of mine to go out and see it for myself and to see what's happening, because I wasn't sure what I was getting through the media, and just, you know, a desire to, you know, go out and try to help a situation that I, as an American, feel, at least through my tax money, I am indirectly affecting.
Now, that's interesting to mention, because I want to just state a fact here. A lot of people may think or may say, well, why do we as Americans, why do we have to be so involved? Why don't we just let them have it at each other? Why do we get involved, and why do we care for the Palestinians or the Israelis and so on? Let's not forget if fact that the United States, we, the taxpayers, sent and have already sent to Israel $84 trillion since 1949. $84 trillion. This is a fact. Actually, it's more than $84 trillion to the Israeli government to finance and to support its occupation of the occupied Palestinian territories. We give them F-16s. That have been used to bomb Palestinian places, and Apache helicopters, which are being used to bomb Palestinian places. And in fact, Israel's use of this weapon and the U.S. money, the taxpayers, is in pure violation of the U.S. Arms Export Act. And that's why we, as Americans here, do care about this money, how it's being used, and why are we giving it to a government that is misusing this money and the military that we are giving it. What about your experience? Tell us when you went there exactly. What did you visit? What did you observe? What did you see?
This summer, ISM's work has been a little different from what ISM has previously done in Palestine, because, you know, with the ceasefire, things were, I don't want to say better, but, you know, things were a little better in the sense that Palestinians were able to, you know, have a little bit more of a semblance of a normal life as opposed to how things had been for the past 2.5 years under the Intifada. And, you know, so the vast majority of my time in the West Bank was spent in the town of Jenin, where I lived in the new city of Jenin, just outside of the Jenin refugee camp. And, you know, there's many different components to ISM, but a lot of the actions this summer were directed at the wall, the apartheid wall that Israel is constructing to separate the West Bank from the Gaza, from Israel proper. And it's not just, you know, a wall of separation, it's a wall that's cutting deep into the West Bank and expropriating large amounts of Palestinian land into what is currently referred to as Israel proper. And I was in the town of Masa in a 4-day standoff defending a home from destruction in order to build this wall. This wall, at least in Masa, is separating a Palestinian town, Masa, from an Israeli settlement, which is right there up against the wall. I was arrested blocking the demolition of this home, which was eventually demolished after the international presence was removed. I saw up close what the wall is doing, and what it, what Israel is doing in order to build the wall. I also had extensive experience seeing the wall in various villages surrounding Jenin, and how it's affecting farmland that's being taken away, or that's, stranded on the other side from the Palestinians who own it and who have worked on it for generations and generations. In Jenin, other than the two suicide bombings yesterday, after the most recent bus bombing in Jerusalem, when the ceasefire was deemed to have been officially broken, and the ceasefire is said to have been officially ended, Jenin was placed under a full-time military curfew, where people were not allowed out onto the streets or to work or to school or to the mosque at all. No one was allowed to be outside. And, in that situation, as internationals, we were doing homestays, we were distributing bread, we were violating curfew because, as an international, I was able to do that without the consequences that could happen to Palestinians if they were to violate a military curfew. And, just providing an international presence and, an international, just letting, these soldiers that were occupying Jenin at that time know that there were international human rights observers around and documenting through photographs and film.
If I could interrupt for a second, a local Houston legislator, Sheila Jackson Lee, was recently visiting Israel. I think a visit was paid for by AIPAC. And she came back and she said things like that she doesn't see why this wall is this, well, she called it a fence, actually. And it's really nothing more than a fence, and it's not a big problem, and she doesn't know what all the fuss is about. You've seen the wall in various parts of land. Can you describe physically the different manifestations of this wall and how it affects, in real terms? How big is it? How tall is it? And what does it do to the actual land?
The wall itself is a very much so a wall in many parts. It's around the town of Qalqilya, actually, it's 8 meters high, so almost 25 feet high.
That's taller than the Berlin Wall, actually.
Yes, it is taller than the Berlin Wall. It's built of solid concrete. In some parts, the wall is a fence, is a chain link fence, with razor wire placed in front of it and on each side. And I am aware of Sheila's comments, and her trip was funded by AIPAC. And it disappoints me that Sheila Jackson Lee, who has been a champion for civil rights throughout her time, would so wholeheartedly endorse a, shameless attempt to physically separate two peoples and to further restrict and further oppress an indigenous population. If I may
add just some also statistics regarding the wall. Basically, the wall, all in all, is expected to have a devastating impact on the lives of 210,000 Palestinians living in 67 towns or villages. 11,700 people in 13 villages will be imprisoned between the wall and the Green Line. And these are really astonishing numbers, basically destroying the livelihood in towns, almost a quarter of a million people. That wall will affect their lives and so on.
Right.
I want to remind our listeners of the phone number to call if they have any questions of our guests live. That phone number is 713-526-5738. It's 713-526-KPFT.
I just want to add a few more things on the wall. In my time up in the Jenin region, we spoke to numerous, farmers and dozens of villages surrounding Jenin that have lost their farmland to this wall, and primarily their their olive orchards, which are now on the other side. Israel claims that people will be able to get back and forth through the wall, that gates are being provided so that farmers are not going to be restricted from their lands. But this is, I have, you know, physically seen that this is not the case. There's very limited movement between, you know, through the wall, and farmers that have property, documented property on the other side of the wall, are being physically denied for weeks and months at a time, access to their lands, which has been.
And what could be the any possible use of a wall that doesn't restrict people?
Right, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
And we know that Amnesty International, in a new report that was released Sunday, they slammed Israel big time for this apartheid wall, and they documented facts that this is, in fact, destroying the peace process, basically, and how it's devastating the Palestinian population, economy, towns and villages, and so on. Amina, let me ask you about your plans of visiting the West Bank and Gaza, or whatever plans you have in mind. And have you changed your mind based on what you've heard, what Israel is doing to the ISMs?
No. The more bad news I get, it seems to encourage me more. I guess I'm weird. It encourages me more because I know that the need is stronger. It's greater. The international presence is extremely necessary to the lives of many Palestinians. Many Palestinians that are under curfew, like he said, the internationals bring them food and sometimes medicine and to check on families and correspondence and things like this. And without this aid, a lot of Palestinians would be very, very much worse off than what they really are. And my plans, I plan to go, leaving at the end of this month. And I will be taking pictures and video, hopefully getting enough footage, if Israel allows me to leave with it, to create some sort of documentary of the checkpoints and of the. My main focus I want to be on the abuse of holy places, and that's something that Israel, and it is a direct violation of international law to abuse the holy places of any religion, and Israel makes it a point to do this on a daily basis to the mosques and to the churches, but more so to the mosques. And
we know that in today's bombing, the Israeli F-16 that bombed the house in Gaza today,
yes,
it caused a major damage and devastated a local mosque in,
yes,
that area. Israel completely ignoring all international norms,
yes,
and treaties, and they did not care a civilian area versus none,
mm-hmm,
and whether there was a mosque or residential area apartments, they just bombed.
2 weeks ago, they actually canceled Friday prayers, which they always deny people the ability to go to Al-Aqsa Mosque in the Dome of the Rock. But they weren't allowing the call to prayer to be heard, and they actually left a menorah in the Dome of the Rock to mark the location of their new temple. It's just an outright defiance of any kind of respect for human decency.
713-526-5738 is the number. 713-526-KPFT.
I was going to say, let's not forget that Ariel Sharon's visit to the Dome of,
yes,
the Rock was one of the things that sparked the latest intifada, something,
exactly,
that's worth reminding people.
And you're listening to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Our guests tonight are Francis Nugent and Amina Al-Zahir, both members of the International Solidarity Movement. And let's go now to our first caller, and that's Ahmed. Ahmed, you're on the air.
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Yes, I just want to say that, well, first of all, I'm a member of the Lost Foundation of Islam under the leadership of the Honorable Salas Muhammad. We all have a fight. I understand exactly what the Palestinians are going through, and my heart goes out to my brothers and sisters over there. But I do want to say that I personally feel that the so-called Jews have no right to that any parts of the land over there. They got in through trickery, lies, deceit, and murder, and they're over there on a false claim. And I don't feel that the Palestinian indigenous people to that land owe the Jews anything. If anything, those so-called Jews owe them a lot, because they have murdered millions of Palestinians and taking their land, and they constantly take more and more land in. I'm not surprised that Sheila Jackson Lee would go over there and come back and report or say what she said, because you know, basically she's a politician who's bound down to this government and these so-called Jews' demands and all. She's not going to challenge their wrongs, because it's the whole world is seeing and knows that they're wrong. You know, they're using, just as you stated earlier, arms that are supplied to them by the United States as well as other European and Caucasian nations, and attacking innocent, defenseless civilians. So I know y'all have a fight, and my heart is out with you, and my prayers and my support is with you. But we too, blacks here in the United States have a fight, and that's what we're doing under the leadership of Honorable Salas Muhammad to reclaim our human rights. Because I really don't have an notable identity, you know what I mean, identity that I can put my finger on, other than the fact that I am black, because, you know, of what was done to us here in the United States. So right now we are known as a new people, Afro-descendants, but we are fighting for our human rights. And if everyone stands up and do what they have to do...
Ahmed, I hate to interrupt you, we're going to run out of time pretty soon, and if you could ask a question or make a very brief comment so we can get to the other callers.
Okay, but my question, I have a question, that is, if anyone who can speak on of some part on the Palestinians' behalf, is there a compromise, or do they feel that they are due through all the atrocities that's been inflicted on their people, do they have their complete whole land back, or do they plan to compromise? Because in our teachings, we in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him, even acknowledge that the Jews have to leave off of that whole area, the whole land, that whole area, and eventually we'll die, you know. the war is going to get, I mean, things are going to get worse. So my question is, what is the outlook or the actual goal of the Palestinians?
Okay, thank you, Vico.
Well, Ahmed, this is Francis. During my trip, the opinion I seem to encounter most is that the Palestinians have been oppressed for so long and have lived under a direct military occupation that at this point they want to be able to live a normal life. And that means a life where they can move between cities, move from their homes to their jobs, to their schools, to their mosques, churches, whatever. They just want to be able to live a normal life and to make a living and to live without constantly knowing that they are being ruled by a foreign military power. And, most people, to solve any conflict, there is, between two sides, there's going to have to be some sort of compromise. And, at this point, the Palestinians have a lot to gain from just, that there's so much to be achieved. And, living a normal life is, I would say, the main goal and the main hope for the vast majority of the Palestinians that I encountered.
And let's not forget also international law and United Nations resolutions. And nobody is asking for the moon here. If Israel complies with United Nations resolutions, which is, by the way, is standing today in violation of 72 UN Security Council resolutions. And we know what happens to other countries when they violated one or two UN resolutions. But the Palestinians are asking basically for Israel, as well as the United Nations and the whole world, to withdraw to the line that Israel occupied in 1967. That is clearly defined: the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. The Palestinians do not want to be oppressed. They have been under foreign military occupation for 36 years. And that is way too long. They have been killed. Their land has been confiscated every single day for the last 36 years. Israel needs to withdraw. There is no need for them to be in the West Bank and Gaza on a land that's not for them. They confess that they are foreign power, they are a military occupation, and they need to withdraw. They are not withdrawing, they are not getting out of there, and that's why we continue to have these problems. 713 526-5738 is the number. Give us a call. We'll take it live. Let's take Corey now. Corey, you're on the air.
All right. I had a question.
Yes, please.
Well, it's sort of an opinion, and I was wondering, how do you think your people will be able to... hold on.
Corey, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was wondering, like, in your opinion, how do you think the people with the war going on and everything will be able to have a higher education?
I mean, Palestinians need to have the right to go to school and to educate themselves. And I know under a direct military curfew for the last 3 years, for on and off for the past 35 years under this direct occupation, Palestinians have been restricted and not allowed to attend schools. And so for many people, just getting to primary school is, you know, quite a challenge. And higher education is even more difficult than that. There are also, you know, the economic restrictions and the economic poverty that's widespread throughout Palestine as a result of this occupation, as a result of being denied, you know, the fundamental right to earn a livelihood, has also, you know, been very detrimental to the amount of people who are able to, you know, attain higher education. But there are good, there are excellent universities throughout the throughout the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip, and so the schools are there. And, you know, hopefully Palestinians will, you know, in the near future, be more easily able to.
And unfortunately, we have reported many times over the years of how Israel targets the educational institutions, and they have, in fact, bombed several institutions of higher education and schools, and they have prevented children by the tens of thousands from reaching their schools every day, and declaring universities as closed for months. Not to forget what happened to Birzeit University, the largest university in the West Bank, where they closed it for numerous months at a time, preventing thousands of Palestinians from obtaining higher education. Corey, we want to thank you so much for calling in and participating today. And let's move to our... go ahead.
Well, one more thing I was going to add. When I was in Jenin just 2 weeks ago, we received a call that they were requesting internationals to come to a checkpoint because a school bus with a group of college students was not being allowed to re-enter Jenin. These students were students at the Arab American University within Jenin and had been on some sort of school-sponsored trip outside of Jenin and were not being allowed back into the town. After, you know, some wrangling with international negotiators, the bus was able to come into Jenin. But, it, you know, that's just one example of something that happens on a regular basis throughout the West Bank, where students are denied the opportunity to be educated.
I have a question for Amina. What do you tell, I mean, you're from, you're born in the U.S.
Yes.
And I presume your family is here for the most part.
I have a lot of family still in Palestine, actually.
Okay, I was going to ask you how your family in the U.S., and in fact, now that you tell me, how your family in Palestine is reacting to the potential of you going out there. What are people saying, and what are your friends saying to you?
Well, it's very mixed. My grandparents and aunts and uncles live in Palestine, and my father lives in Egypt. And my mother is American, and she lives here, and she's not happy. She's not supportive. She thinks I'm crazy. She thinks I've lost my mind. And my father is very supportive, but also extremely fearful. I was the one that he considered safe because I'm here. And now I'm going over there, so he thinks that I'm a little bit crazy. But he's very supportive and worried, as most fathers would be.
But and what is it that you hope to achieve? One of the things that came out earlier about what the ISM people do for Palestinians, you know, the some form of protection in some situations and being able to give aid and medical treatment and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, I haven't been there, so I don't know this firsthand. But I would imagine that one of the big positives is psychological relief. you know, the idea that you're not isolated and the world hasn't forgotten about you. I don't know if you care to comment on what you think you'll see when you go there and what you're expecting out of your trip.
Okay. I've been to Palestine twice before, not with ISM, but just as a tourist to see my family and whatnot. And what I'm going there directly to do is the olive harvest, which I think is one of the most important things that an international can do for Palestine. The olives, for people who don't know, are everything to Palestinians. It's the food, it's the tie to the land, it's tradition, it's everything. And Israelis come along and soldiers come and assist the settlers in destroying the olive orchards. And like 2 weeks ago, I think it was, they destroyed 350 acres of Palestinian land for preparation for the wall, and it was full of olive trees. And yes, the psychological relief is something that they appreciate. That when they see, from what my family tells me, every time they meet an American that comes either with ISM or with another organization, it's refreshing, because it lets you know that the entire world hasn't forgotten you, that you're still on the minds of somebody.
Throughout my trip, I was, you know, just throughout the Middle East in general, from Jordan to Iraq to Palestine, I was so, you know, felt very welcomed, and people were very warm to me. And in Palestine, I was thanked by many people, and there's definitely the sense, I think Palestinians for the most part are very happy to know that there are, you know, internationals and particularly Americans over there that, you know, have their back, to use the term. And, you know, there is so much outspoken support of Israel that I think that, you know, Palestinians often feel that they're, you know, up against the world. And I think it's important for internationals to go over there and to let the Palestinian people know that they're that there are internationals in solidarity with them. And that's a lot of, you know, that's fundamentally what ISM does.
Okay, let's take another caller now. And next online would be Matt. Matt, you're on there.
Yeah, I got a question. You keep talking about history here, and I was just looking it up, and I can't find any history for Palestine for leaders. Who was the leader? Who is there, a passport or anything of a Palestinian country from 200 years ago? I can't find anything like that.
Sir, I would ask you to go to PalestineHistory.com. It gives an extensive overview of the history of Palestine from the beginning of time until the present day. Palestine very much was a country. My grandparents, my grandfather, he's in his 60s, and he has an expired Palestinian passport.
From where?
Palestine. It's a Palestinian passport, and he has money and postage stamps and all kinds of other things.
Wait a minute. I thought you said you have family in Egypt.
Palestinians aren't allowed to. All of them are not allowed to live in Palestine. My father lives in Palestine. My grandparents live. My father is in Egypt. My grandparents are in Palestine.
So this passport is from when?
It is from Palestine. It is
from
before
when?
1948, but Palestine was very much a sovereign country.
It was? I thought it was British.
It was under the British mandate, but it was still Palestine. It
was
a country.
Who was the leader?
What is the point you're trying to make? So who was the leader of Israel in 1940? What is the point you're trying to make across? Palestine was under the British mandate until 1940s, when Israel declared its state, and it occupied, and we know what happened in the 1948, and Israel destroyed and wiped out 418 villages of the surface of this earth, completely demolished them, and forced thousands forced thousands and thousands of Palestinians out of their homeland, and brought in settlers from Europe and other countries, and settled them by force after destroying villages on Palestinian land. And in 1967, Israel didn't finish, and it continued to occupy Jerusalem, the West Bank and Gaza Strip, where 3.5 million Palestinians currently live there, and let's not forget 4.5 million others who live worldwide. You have a total Palestinian population of between 8 and 9 million worldwide. The majority of them live outside because they have been forced out of their country, and that's the core problem. There are United Nations resolutions. There is an international law that says Israel must withdraw and there should be a full independent Palestinian state on 1967 lands. That's Gaza, East Jerusalem, and the West Bank. And it's that simple. We can go back in history and go back and fight for what? That's not going to resolve the problem. That's not going to resolve the problem for Israel, nor is it going to resolve it for the Palestinians. So if we look at the core problem now, how is it going to be resolved and where do we go from here? Military solution is, or military option will never be a solution to the problem. History teaches us that. History is more accurate than what I believe or what you believe. Look at what's happening every day. There is a suicide bombing, there is a counterattack from Israelis and from the Palestinians, so on. We know the military option is not a solution. Both parties need to agree that they need to stop this and abide by international law. And the core problem here is a foreign military illegal occupation. Thank you for your call, Matt, because we have only 3 minutes left. We are going to try to take our last caller, and that's Ralph, because of the time. Ralph, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Thanks.
Please make it brief, though.
I'll try to. At work, I have a debate with different guys. They're on the right side, but you know how that is. You have your arguments. But one of the things that came up to me was last week, you were mentioning that apparently the Muslims as a group voted for George Bush. Is this true?
No, there are a lot of Muslim organizations in the U.S. There are the four major American Muslim organizations, I believe, including CARE and the American Muslim Council and MPAC and another one, I forgot the name of hand. They are going to be rallied to vote against Bush in the elections because of the way the U.S., the Bush administration is handling the Muslim community and the Arab community at large in the United States through the Patriot Act 1 and 2 and other things. That's what I believe, what I've read last week.
But the last time around, I think, is what he was asking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, last time a lot of people rallied behind Bush, exactly, and they are obviously...
we were question. Scared of Lieberman.
We don't know, but obviously they were... that's the choice that they did. Now they are obviously choosing otherwise. Ralph, we're getting only a minute left in the show. All right, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to take the other callers on hold because we're nearing the top of the hour. Francis, do you have a last word to say? So unfortunately we didn't get to ask you, but how about just giving us a few seconds to summarize your experience in Baghdad in about 30 seconds or so?
30 seconds or so. I was there a week. You know, there's that Iraq is very much so under military occupation as well. Strong military presence throughout the city of Baghdad. Beautiful city, vibrant culture. Found the Iraqi people to be unbelievably welcoming and to me as an American. You know, while there is hostility towards American foreign policy and towards American elected officials, Iraqis do not hate Americans, you know, for being American. Just, and, you know, that's one point I just continue to stress more and more back here in the United States, because that is a perception that I think our media promotes and that I felt I received from the media before I went to Iraq, and I can't wait to return.
All right, Francis Nugent and Amina Al-Zahir, both members of the International Solidarity Movement, have been our guests for tonight. I want to thank you both so much for being on the show.
I would like to thank Arab Voices for allowing me to come talk about my experiences.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And many thanks to my co-host, Mark, and our assistants on the phone by Matthew. You're listening to the Arab Voices on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, producer and host of the show. Until